Hello, everyone, and welcome to another special episode of the 1973 podcast. It brings me great pleasure once to have somebody that we've been trying to get on for a few weeks, former NHL alum and two-time Stanley Cup champion, Chris Dingman. Chris, thank you for coming on and sharing your time with us. And hopefully, at the end, I always tell everybody, hopefully, friend of the show after we're all done.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. I'm a 76, so I'll let you do the math.
No, it's
How
all right.
old I am.
Still Gen
Probably you can
X,
probably
though.
tell by my beard right now.
Yeah. Hey,
Oh
listen.
my God.
I shaved just so I don't look like Santa Claus.
Well, my wife told me I should probably trim my beard, but I can't do it at home because it makes too big a mess. So I gotta wait for my next road trip and try and clean up the mess a little bit. So I feel bad leaving messes for the maid. So yeah, here's where I am right now in between. Low maintenance, but high maintenance.
It looks good to us, right, fellas? Looks
Yeah,
great.
playoff beer. Playoff beer.
Thanks.
Yeah, playoff beer in August. I love
So, Chris, let me. I always ask everybody the love of the game. How did it all start as a kid?
it. Oh man, I don't even know. I just like playing hockey, I guess. Well, growing up in Canada, Edmonton, obviously the Oilers were good. So I was born in 76, and the Oilers started getting good in the 80s. So I think my dad, well, I don't think my dad had season tickets, and obviously the Oilers were a big deal. And so yeah, I just started playing hockey. Went to the outdoor rink, or ODR, as my kids call it. Went to the ODR. Just love playing any type of hockey, street hockey, going to the rink. Actually, good story. Well, I don't know if it's a good story, but it's a good story out of a bad story. I don't know how old I was. I think I was like five, and we used to go skiing on the odd weekend, and so we had like a trip, a bunch of families, and so I could ski, but I couldn't stop. So my dad would kind of like hold me and like guide me down the hill, I guess, or whatever. And one of the other dads was like, "Oh, I got him." Whatever. It was the first day of the ski trip, and he let me go, and I couldn't stop, so I was like right into a tree, broke my leg, and yeah. So I guess from what I recall, I was stuck in the chalet for the rest of the ski trip. But the good out of it is I got to meet Wayne Gretzky. I got a picture I posted years ago on Facebook and Instagram. You could tell the year just from like the nasty sweater I had on. It was like a wool plaid kind of deal. My hair was like, when your parents used to, your mom would cut your hair straight across
Yeah,
or try to. Anyways, what's it called?
the bowl cut.
Yeah, the bowl cut, yeah, Lloyd Christmas or whatever. Yeah. So anyways, yeah, I got to meet him, took a picture, and then later on that night, around dinner time, I heard a knock on the door, and my parents or my dad was like, "You should probably get that." I'm like, "You got a broken leg here." So I get up and like hobble over and open the door, and it's Wayne Gretzky. He's like, "Oh, hey Chris, mind if I come in?" I was like, "Sure. Yeah, that's Mr. Gretzky." And anyway, so he came and he had dinner, and we played that television game. I don't know if you remember the one with the pad and then the dial or the disc thing at the bottom,
Yeah,
whatever.
the Pong, yeah.
So we, no, it wasn't Pong. It was like they had the NFL game. So it had the
Oh,
keypad and then the disc at the bottom.
yeah.
Yeah, it was like, I think it was before Atari, maybe. Anyway, so he played for, I don't know, might have been 20 minutes, might have been an hour, felt like forever, but I got to meet him, and it's pretty cool. And then I got to play against him quite a few years later. So I guess maybe meeting Wayne Gretzky and the Oilers being good is where my passion for hockey. Well, also I was kind of, I don't know, I think I was kind of an angry kid. I had a bad temper. I still do. I just had a lot of therapy, so it takes a while for it to bubble. It is just the perfect sport where I don't know, I don't want to say kill, but like you, oh man, when I hit people, when I wasn't trying to bump them. I was trying to go. But they could save Lucic five rows deep. So it was a perfect sport where you could, yeah, just try and take people's heads off. And I wasn't even trying to, they were clean hits, but I mean, I don't know. My parents used to get in fights all the time. My mom, especially, God rest her soul. Like, because people want to lynch me because I was always playing up after about nine, it was about 9 or 10. I was playing, always playing up like 2 years, kids 2 years older than me. And I'd smoke, like, I'd just destroy some kids. And parents would be just mother effing me, and my mom be like, "He's 12, he's whatever, he's 12, whatever." And I had a dad come out on the ice one time. I hit his kid. I assume it was his kid because he was pretty bad towards the end of the game. And Guy came on the ice and he's like, mother effing me, and coming. I'm like, pardon my language, I'm scared shitless, but I'm like, I'm holding my stick. I'm like, if I got a tomahawk in my wall, I'm looking at the coach like, hey, can you help me out here a little bit or something? And I never forget, my dad jumped out of the stands and I went and grabbed the guy by the throat, picked him up. He's like, you ever go near my son? Yeah, I'll fucking kill you. And like, I was like, oh man, I never saw that side of my dad before. And so everyone was like, holy shit, like whatever. And like, I don't know, I think we're like 12, like maybe somewhere around there. And this is back when, you like get half dressed or something. So I just remember after the game, I like, I think I had my shin pads and my socks and my hockey pads on. I get in the car and he's like, you want a Slurpee? And I was like, a bag of chips or something. I was like, sure. And he's like, not a word to your mother. I'm like, no problem.
So these are the stories that we love, Dinger.
Getting lynched,
So
by grown adults. Yeah.
yeah, it
Toughen me
hasn't
up.
changed. It has not changed. I mean, the only thing that's come along is social media. So everybody's got a camera and all that stuff. So a lot of the hockey moms get pegged on social media and on the news and things like that for flipping out at games. But I guess if you've never seen it and you've never been involved in hockey, I think it's a high price tag and there's high expectations for the turnaround on that mortgage payment that some of these parents kind of put up front. So I think that's where a lot of this animosity comes from. Not from you. I don't
Oh,
want to make you mad, but not from you.
no. Yeah, I remember my dad just gave me the talk. He was around 14, 13, 14, 15, maybe 13, somewhere there. Just the old, I'll support this, and as long as it's going somewhere, so better work your ass off. So he's like, as soon as you're not going anywhere, you're getting a real job. I mean, I'd pump gas. I worked at Petro Canada, and I baled hay one summer, and I was actually a doorman at a local, wasn't a bar, it was like an Irish pub kind of thing, and checking ID, and it was all people from the high school I went to before I went to Brandon. But I'd come back and the spring and summer, whatever, I'm checking IDs and like looking at the name and looking at the guy, and I'm like, this isn't you. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, just go in. So anyways, yeah, it was a good motivator. Yeah, so I don't know if they spent a mortgage payment, but it was a really good motivator. So I tell my kids same thing. I'll support this as long as you're working hard and it's going to go somewhere. So just try to be a good dad. And yeah, they have jobs. My kids have jobs too, and they're making money. So trying to alleviate some of the stress on me because, oh man, one son I still have to pay for sticks for, the other son I don't. But thank God, like their last year when they played U18 together, I had 20 sticks between the two of them. So a couple of them were warranties. So there's about
I
maybe a
like
third
that.
of them are, yeah, there's like, I hate, I don't like doing this, but whatever. Like I used the same two sticks for like 4 years. I had a couple of Braden Cobras when I was in Tampa. I still have some of my pattern left, but I look at it now and I'm like, God, how did I ever use this? And because I got the blue synergies and the yellow synergies and the tacks, the blue tacks, or no, the gray synergy, sorry, and the blue tacks. And I got my old wood sticks, the Sherwoods, and yeah, like the two-piece Christian blade at the Easton Ultralight Shaft. And yeah, I give it a little flex. I'm like, how many, when did I buy this? And like, is it gonna
Right,
last? So
yeah,
yeah.
right in that hockey demographic, those synergy sticks when they first came out, those things were badass.
Oh yeah. But they only had two curves. They had the Sakic and the Drury. So I was
That's
in
it.
Carolina, and yeah, we'd heat them up because like prig the Drury one, or no, was it, yeah, the Sakic was like this, I think, and the Drury was like a heel.
Yeah.
It was Teddy, it wasn't Chris, I think. It was like a sandwich, so it was a pretty big curve. So guys would heat them up and try and flatten them out, and we snapped a few of them. So
So
don't tell anybody.
let me ask you how you ended up with the Wheat Kings. How did that come about from youth hockey to the Wheat Kings?
Was just playing hockey. I was playing Midget Triple A as a 15-year-old. Myself and Damon Lankow were the two underage guys, and Lanks led the team in scoring. I was 1 point behind him, I believe. But anyways, I get a call. It's different now, going to the draft for my younger guy. My older boy didn't get drafted, but the younger guy, it's there's all this talk, and then teams would reach out to us. Like let's say Swift Current, Chad Leslie, he's a GM, great guy. He talks, he's like, if we drafted, would sort of be willing to come to Swift Current? I'm like, absolutely. And then same thing, Moose Jaw, Prince George, all these teams. And it's like a thing where guys won't go to certain towns. And I mean, I don't know, I'm old school where I told him like you want to go. He's like, yeah. I'm like, you go wherever somebody wants you, and if it you don't like it, then same thing, same talk my dad gave me. So how it came for me is it, I was just playing hockey, I had no idea, and then got a call. I was drafted by the Seattle Thunderbirds, and then they're hosting the Memorial Cup that year, so they flew myself and my parents out. And I'm a drummer, and I'm into grunge and heavy metal, and I like country too and old school hip hop, but more like primarily like a metal guy. And so I'm like, man, I'm going to Seattle, like this is great, like. It's gonna be good. So we go to the Memorial Cup, and like, we're staying in a hotel, we're going to the games, and I got a used pair of gloves, and I got six wood, they're white Bauer sticks. I'm like, this is awesome. I got wood stick, like these Bauer wood sticks that nobody else had, and well, nobody else in Edmonton that I know of. So, anyways, I'm all pumped and I'm excited, and then I get a call 2 days later from Kelly McCrimmon. So my parents answer, and then hands me the phone, and parents kind of looking at me. I'm like, oh shit, like what the frig. So hopefully it's okay to swear, I try not
Yeah,
to, but
have at
okay. So yeah, I've been on a couple where it's okay if I swear, like we would prefer if you don't, but anyways, I try to keep it as clean as possible.
different
It's like
podcast.
each one's different. So yeah, hey Chris, this is Kelly McCrimmon for the Brandon Wheat Kings. We just acquired you, right? So I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I'm like, okay, what does that mean? Well, you're Brandon Wheat King now. And excited to have you on the team, whatever, blah blah blah, and hang up. And not to be ignorant, but I looked at my parents, I'm like, where's Brandon? Manitoba. So we looked up, and there's like 42,000 people. I was like, oh my God. Like from Seattle to like Edmonton at the time, back in the early 90s, there might have been 700,000 people, like maybe six, I don't know, but it was like a big city. And Seattle to Brandon, like we look 42,000 people. It's like, oh my God. Hey, they gave me the talk, just go there. If you don't like it, you can always come home. And I went and had four of the best years of my life. We rode a bus for a lot, but it was great. But there was a so Seattle was hosting the Memorial Cup. They needed a goaltender, so they traded like three or four guys for Chris Osgood, and then there was supposed to be a protected list, or and I wasn't supposed to be on that list. So anyways, I ran into the GM of the Seattle Thunderbirds when I moved back to Edmonton 7 years ago from Tampa. But it's probably about 10 years ago now in Tampa. I was at a game, and the GM came up to me, Russ Farrell. He's like, hey Chris, this was, hey, nice to meet you, Russ. He goes, I just wanted to, Russ Farrell, I was with Seattle Thunderbirds, I was a GM. He's like, I just want to tell you, Kramer effed us on that one. You shouldn't have been available. And I was like, oh, thanks, man. Appreciate it. But at the time I was like, oh my God, I'm crushed. And you don't think this team wants you, but Brandon really wanted me, and we went to two Memorial Cups. It was a great, great experience, and yeah.
So getting drafted 19th overall by Calgary. You gonna tell me everybody that we've had on, especially Steve Passmore, had a great draft day story. Tell us about your experience at the draft.
Well, I got a great Passmore story, but I
Oh,
got a
oh,
draft.
oh, oh, wait, you gonna tell that Passmore story? Because let me just say we had him on, and what a character. He was right in our wheelhouse, that Gen X perspective. And he wants to be a member of the podcast. I know he does. He so wait till we see him after you tell the story.
Beauty. He was playing for Edmonton's farm team, which was Hamilton, I think, at the time. I was in St. John. So they played. I think we played him three times. I don't know, whatever it was. It was a Saturday night, Friday night, whatever. Not a lot to do in St. John. So we played, and all we had was practice the next day. So we go to, this was the minors. It's like you go out and you beat the crap out of each other, and then you go out and get drunk, basically. And, so we went out and had a few, and like he's, well, let's do some shots, and like whatever, I don't know, 10 shots later, whatever it was. So my investment guy at the time wanted to buy a truck, but he's like, how much is a cab in St. John? So they had three zones: $5, $10, $15. And $15 took you like way out in the boonies. He's like, okay, I want you to keep track and let me know at Christmas time how much you spent. I think I spent like, I don't know, $300, maybe not even. So he's like, whatever, you can buy your truck, whatever. But anyways, so I take a cab every morning, and then I'd usually get a ride from one of the guys, whoever had a vehicle. So I'm taking a cab to the rink. I go to the cabbie. I'm like, can you pull over for a second? He's like, what? I'm like, can you pull over for a second? He's like, sure. He pulls over, open the door. I'm like, ah, blow chunks. Go for team stretch. As soon as team stretch is over, I go under the bleachers, blow chunks. I don't think the coach would Paul Baxter or whatever. I don't think he was paying attention or knew. But I might have an unreal practice because I'm thinking I'm still half in the bag. I don't know, like nothing left in my stomach. So I'm like, I'm sniping and I'm like, just whatever. I feel like crap, but I felt pretty good. So I'm like, we were doing a drill and I'm like kind of leaning on the boards and passing comes out. He's like, Digger. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, how you doing? I'm like, I don't know, man. He's like, oh my God, I went home puked all night. How about you? And then as soon as he said that, I was like, blah. And just, it was just pure water at this point. There's nothing left. And he's like, oh, you too. And I was like, yeah. Anyways, he's like, okay, I'll talk to you later. So, anyways, great guy. But draft story. So, like the actual draft or leading up to the draft? So,
Leading up in, leading up to draft day and how anybody groomed
sure.
you.
I don't know. Like, so. Again, just playing hockey, and I had a couple bad quad contusions. I tore my MCL, I think, that year. So all I kind of remember from that year is I always played left wing. I played center when I was younger, played D when I was super young. But I played left wing, and I came back from injury. I was playing right wing, and I'm playing like garbage. Like, not garbage, but I'm struggling because I never played right wing before. It's totally different. I'm struggling, and whatever. And Calgary came and talked to me, I think at my billet's house or at the rink or something. So some teams were talking to him. And Calgary did this psychological testing where there's like they asked you all these questions and then a bunch of different things. And then it was looking at these ink blots, I was like, what do you see? And I'm like, I'm going into detail. I'm like, yeah, okay, there's like a couple of rabbits over here, blah, 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 whatever. And then the other thing they did was, it was a string with a paper clip on the bottom. And so you put your elbow on the table and you hold it still. He's like, okay, make it start swinging. I don't know how I did it, but like I wasn't moving anything. I had that thing like wheeling around and I'm like, ooh, it's pretty cool. And then this dot test, it was A1, B2, C3, and you're like, go dot to dot. But then they put headphones on and then whatever, they're telling you to do something different. So I started and I stopped. I'm like, hey, what am I doing? Like, yeah, just keep doing the same thing. So I started, I stopped again. And I was like, okay, am I doing A1, B2, C3, or am I doing what this is telling me? They're like, no, you're doing A1, B2. So anyways, I did it that time. So they give you the results. And like, so the guy goes through with the doctor and he's like, okay, the ink blotches. So he went through like other people said. He's like, this guy said he saw two clouds, like, or whatever, like no detail. He's like, the dot test, he's like, it took you three times, but it's the fastest out of anyone we've tested. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And then they didn't talk to me again, Calgary. And then, like in the when the season was over, like I went to Quebec. So Quebec City, the Nordiques are still in the league. So flew out to Quebec City, a bunch of guys, and we did testing. Went out for dinner and with Sherry Bassin, and we're having drinks. And he takes us to the bar. Diego Bear drops us off. Have fun, guys. And like 17, but whatever. We got into the bar and then went to New Jersey and. I remember like Jersey had a bunch of Russian guys and like us North American guys, we were really good at bench press and pull-ups and stuff like that. Not the best in the treadmill. These guys could run forever. Anyway, so I do all this and Wade Belak was in, God rest his soul, he was in the league and we'd fought like four or five times that year and had some pretty good fights. The one in particular, he split me for six and I broke his nose. And it was the second fight. We go to Saskatoon, and McAllister is fighting Colin Cloutier, and Beeler calls me out to center, so we go square off, whatever. So we fight. And I remember I get up. I end up on top of him. I get up, and everyone's cheering because I'm bleeding, and I'm, like, pointing at the ice, like, pointing at him, all the fans, whatever. And he gets up. He's bleeding. I was like, hey. So anyway, so going into the draft, my agent, Newport Sports, they're like, hey, they're thinking, the talk is early second, maybe late first. We're not sure. So, okay. Then you go talk to all these teams. And everyone who wanted to talk about, so you and Bielak fought. Like, I met Paul Holmgren. And, like, what an intimidating man. Oh, my God. So he's a Philly, I believe, at the time. He's like, hey, Chris, Paul Holmgren. I shake his hand. Like, I thought you literally almost crushed my hand. It was like, take my hand, add another knuckle. And he's got a crew cut and, like, square jaw. And I'm like, so he's like, yeah, you and Bieler fought a few times. Like, who won? And I was like, wow, one of them I won for sure because I'll take six sippers over a broken nose any day of the week. And the other one, I got the better of me, you got the better of me. He's like, okay. And every team kind of asked the same thing. And I think Calgary never talked to me again. So I just wasn't sure. And then, sure enough, 19th pick, Calgary, draft Chris Dingman, whatever. You'll meet all the guys. And, Doug Rysebaugh was a GM, great guy. And Tom Thompson was a head scout. So then he comes to me and goes, "Hey, really happy to have you." I said, "Oh, thanks. I know you're an Oilers fan. That was a big joke growing up in Edmonton. Hopefully you're a Flames fan." I'm like, "Yeah, absolutely." He's like, and he goes, "You don't know how happy we were when they put you on right wing." He's like, "You were terrible. We knew we wanted you at 19." I was like, "Thanks for telling me now." Like, I was like struggling, mentally or whatever you want to call it. My confidence was crap because they couldn't play right wing or I couldn't get the puck out. So, yeah, that was kind of my draft experience. And then I was in Hartford. In downtown Hartford, there's like just buildings. So, like, we were driving around talking to teams. And so I just remember a bunch of us Western Leaguers like Clark Welm, Rhett Warner, Wade Belak, myself, Colin Cloutier, Mike Dubinsky. We were too young to go to the bar, so we just, I forget whose room we're in. We're just having a couple and hanging out. That was my draft experience.
So you get to Calgary, and at the time, who were the veterans there that kind of, showed you how to play in the NHL?
Go back then, Joe Nundyk was still there, Gary Roberts, Fleury. I mean, basically, most of the guys left over from that Cup team. So I remember Gary Roberts took me out for lunch. It was pretty cool when I was like 18, 19. And then I played my first preseason game in Vancouver against the Canucks. And then the guys took me out to this bar called the Roxy and, got me drunk. And like, yeah, it's pretty cool. In the NHL, I wasn't, but whatever. And then, yeah, they kept me as a 19-year-old. I think it was the last cut. Kept me, and I was calling my GM, Kelly McCrimmon. I was like, "Do you know what's going on?" Because I'm in the hotel for like, I think it was like 3 weeks, a month. He's like, "Oh, let me talk to him, whatever." And anyways, ended up going back, and then we can go to the next year if you want. But yeah, playing the minors for a year, and then playing the NHL.
Before we go any further, any good Theo Fleury stories?
None. No, Theo's the best. He was a beauty. He liked me. So I was a 21-year-old rookie, and I'm sitting in the back of the bus, second to last seat. I'm in the card game, and went on a golf trip at the end of the year, and we had three Winnebagos, and that was quite the trip. And yeah, I mean, he liked his vodka cranberries, so we played guilty a fair amount. Yeah, let's go. We're going out. I remember the first time I went for dinner. I have a Diet Coke and went to the keg. And, this, we're talking 49, what's 20? My math's not good anymore. 28 years ago, give or take. Is that what it is? 28, 21? Yeah. And so I don't know, like, I had a steak and a Diet Coke and maybe a Caesar salad and get the bill. I always do, my friends are all in the service industry and stuff. So I did my 20% tip and I'm like, laid out $40. And Theo's like, "No, 80." I'm like, "What are you talking about, man? I only had like a 6 ounce or whatever." And he's like, "Everyone pays the same. So you might as well, you can drink whatever you want." I'm like, "Okay." So the next time we went for dinner and had a glass of wine or a beer. Yeah, like, I'm in the waiting room before. He walked by and he's like, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm just working out." "Never seen a dumbbell score a goal, kid." I'm like, "Yeah, fair enough. I don't have the talent you have, but whatever." And then we're in Montreal. And like, so we were live, one of the last teams to fly commercial. So we flew Air Canada. So like, we're on a regular flight with, I don't want to say regular people, but families and whatever. My first trip, so the vets got the aisle seat and the window seats, and the rookie, if there wasn't any aisle or window seats, you got a middle seat. So my first trip, sitting like this between Sandy McCarthy and Guy Lafleur, and I'm like, "This sucks." Then I'm in the NHL, this is great. I'm wearing a suit and a tie because Brian Sutter had to wear a suit and tie. And I'm like, "This sucks." It's like, the person in front of me better not try and put their seat back or I'm playing a punch and seat. But anyway, so we would, they go to the baths, we'd stay over in every city. So, it was pretty cool because you got to go. It's not about going out, but I get to play in the old Maple Leaf Gardens, and then you get to, whatever. So you go, you're in Montreal, you're in Toronto, New York, wherever. I'll never forget this one trip we did. It was like Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, but we finished in Montreal Saturday night, Hockey Night in Canada, or whatever. And so you stay over, and you just had to be on the bus for like, it was a 7 a.m. bus or something. We're sitting on the bus, and The boys had had a few, and I think Theo was still feeling pretty good. And he's sitting at the back of the bus. He's like, "Yep, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles." And like the GM's on the bus, and like everybody. And like I'm 21, and I'm sitting like in the seat in front of him, or two seats in front of him. And he's like, "Yep, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, cheapest team in the league. You find the worst connections, the worst flights, worst far." And I'm like, "Theo, like, check you out." So like, "What are you talking about, dude? You're all last night with me too." And I'm like, "Oh my God, man." Like, so yeah, he was a beauty. I don't know how he did it. He didn't matter what time. Like, it was another time around, and Mike Peluso was my roommate. Peluso is a great guy, but breakfast for him was a cigarette, a piece of toast, and a coffee. And yeah, he'd smoke in the bathroom and then close the door, and I'm allergic to smoke, and I'd have to go in there. I'm like, "Oh God, I'm dying here." But a great guy. We were out one time, and Peluso, like, he knew, like, there was a few nights like I didn't go out, and he'd come back to the room, and it's like, I don't know what time. He's trying to be quiet, and I'm like, "Hey, Peluso, you okay?" He's like, "Hey, kid." And so he nicknamed Theo Viper, because Theo bought a Viper, like a Dodge Viper, and he got a Viper shirt when he bought the car. So he nicknamed him Viper. And he's like, "Oh, Viper got me again, like drug me out or whatever." Oh man, I tell you. So yeah, I could go on and on. He's a great guy, but oh man, he, I don't know. So anyway, so Palouse is, yeah, where I was going with that. So Palouse, we're out one, I don't know, we're in Lauderdale or somewhere. And he's like, we're out, like, we go to the bathroom, and I'm like, he's like, "Let's go." I'm like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Let's go." And I'm like, "Well, we got to say bye to the guys." He's like, "Let's go." And I'm like, "Yeah, man, we got to say bye to the guys, man. It's rude." He goes, "Get in the cab, kid." And I'm like, "Yeah, man, but it's rude." He's like, "Get in the cab now." And I'm like, "Okay." So we get in the cab. I'm like, "Pluce, man, it's kind of rude." And he's like, "Like, got to say bye." And he goes, "Listen, if we go back there and tell everyone we're leaving, everyone's gonna call us, so you know what, and then we're staying for guaranteed two more beers." So he's like, "Let me give you some advice. When it's time to leave, you just throw money down or whatever, and you just leave. You just walk right out the door. That's what you do." And I'm like, "Okay." He's like, especially if Theo there, because Theo would be like, "Where are you going here?" So, anyways, yeah.
So that's first full year in the NHL. Any big tilts that first, did you get challenged right off the rip?
Well, no, preseason, like the year I made it, I had 4 goals, 4 assists. I had 2 the last game of preseason against Edmonton, which is pretty cool, my hometown. In fights, I had 6 fights in preseason, and then my first fight, Stu Grimson, I was trying to fight him the whole game. He didn't want to fight, and then finally he's like, "Okay." And that was not a good life choice. So I don't know what happened, but man, I ended up on top of him, I think. And I he hit me so hard, I was like going to the penalty box. I was like, when you have water in your ear, and you're like, I'm like, slamming my ear. I couldn't hear out of my ear for like 2 days. Felt like I had water in it. So, anyways, that one, there was a Hockey Night in Canada game against Jersey. I fought Scott Daniels twice. That was when they called up Rocky Tobbs, and he fought Aloha twice. And that was a Saturday night, so people loved it because next page of the paper, like, I think Rocky like tore his jersey or something. He's going to Pelly, and Rock's a great guy, but he had the long hair, and he was like the next fighter or whatever. Fought the Rock a couple times, wasn't fun. Jeff Hodgers, kind of what I remember from my first year, but everyone's tough. Like, I was my first year, I was 245, but I was beating the crap out of anyone in junior. And like, the only one that gave me a hard time was like Beeler, basically like second, well, from 18, 17, 18, 19. I knew I could pretty much beat anyone up except for Bielak and McAllister, the two guys I think. And yeah, you get to the show, man, it's different animal. Like, I didn't fight Probert, but then when I got traded to Colorado, I fought Proby a few times. And that's actually how I got back in the league is I fought him. I did pretty good. I was in the Fleury deal. I was the other guy. So I went to Hershey for a month. We played Chicago back to back. And Chicago had like Reed Simpson, Brad Brown, Vandenbosch, Probert, Todd Simpson, Mark Bell, like all these guys. And Colorado had like Warren Reichel and like Jeff Hodgers. And Adam Foy was, wasn't a fighter, but so they got pushed around pretty bad. So I get called up, Michel Goulet comes down. He's like, "Yeah, Dinger, we're calling you up." I'm like, "Okay." So right up, he's like, "Yeah, we need, whatever. Now I got to push around. We need a physical presence, blah blah blah." And I'm like, "Yeah, no problem." So this is back in the wood stick era. So I did up four Sherwoods round. I like to round them at the top. I don't know why, but whatever. Curved them, taped them. I broke one in warm up and played a minute and 52 seconds and fought Broby twice. So first one was after face. It was a center ice face off after a goal. So I go out there and I know I got to fight. Like, whatever. I want to play a little hockey too, but Theo was there and telling her what a good guy I was. And he's like, "Wait till the anthem, kid." In Chicago, so I never played in Chicago. And that's, everyone starts cheering and as the anthem goes along. And so anyways, first shift, they get put out after a goal and line up at center. And this guy comes over and bumps me and goes, "Your coach send you out here to give me a try." I was like, "No, but if you want to go, we can." He goes, "Are you sure?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure." I look over, it's Probert. I'm like, "Eh, maybe not a good idea, but see how we fight." And all I could hear was Theo from the bench, "Keep swinging, banger, keep swinging." So, yeah, I kind of got the better of him. And yeah, I get to a penalty, go to the penalty box, and I'm like, adrenaline's going. And, I'm like, "Hey, Augie comes over and brings my elbow pads or gloves on or whatever." I'm like, "How'd he do?" He's like, "Good." I'm like, "How's my face?" He's like, "Good." So, yeah, then he jumped me kind of later in the game, whatever, and got sent back down. But yeah, I fought him like 5 times, I think twice. Well, the second one was really a fight, but the next year I fought him like 4 times. And every time we played Chicago, fighting him or fighting Vandenbush, and it's like, "Can I play hockey here a little bit? Like, I get it, we got to fight, but like, I want to play hockey a little bit sometimes." And like, Vandenbush was another guy in the minors. Like, the minors, you fight all the time. And you're playing the same team like 3 times in a row sometimes. And it's like, how many times can you fight the same guy? Like, you play the rookie games or whatever. And Bushy was a guy that, he was in Portland at the time. I was in St. John. So, in junior, I had a goalie cut jersey. So, I had the trainer make my sleeve bigger and I had Velcro attached. I learned this from Sandy McCarthy, is a kind of a trick. It's like the Rob Ray thing. So, you get shoulder pads, they're one piece. And you only have Velcro on the arms, nothing on the chest. And then, so then you can do like one or two, you get out of your, like, you literally get out of your jersey, and then the guy's hooped. And so I had the Velcro attached to the jersey on my elbow pad. And yeah, that was my little cheat code or whatever in junior. And then, so I had it in St. John, and Bushy wanted to fight. So fight, I kind of beat him up a little bit. You're going to the penalty box, like, "We're going again." I'm like, "Yeah, whatever." A couple shifts later, we fight. I'm going to the penalty box, "We're going again." I'm like, "Whatever, man. Can we play some hockey here?" So anyways, their coach called me an illegal jersey, so I had to come out for the third in Belak's jersey. So it was like, was it his jersey or someone? Anyways, it had no name bar on the back. So I'm wearing a jersey with no name bar instead of the 32, whatever I wore. And then, like, so I fight him again. And the next time we play him, we're in St. John. He's like, "It's warm up, like, we're going tonight." And I'm like, "Fuck off, man. I'm not fighting you." And he's like, "We're going." I'm like, "I'm gonna two-hand you right in the face. I'm playing hockey." He's like, "The GM's here, you gotta fight me." And like, that's kind of what it was back then, Like, it was, guys knew when the player, like, this is before video and live streaming and all that stuff. It was like game of telephone, coach, "Yeah, he played great, play like crap," or whatever, "He played great, he played like crap." Like, so the GM was in town, he always knew. It was like, "The GM's in town, you gotta fight me." And I'm like, I said, "I'll tell you what, Bush." I said, "I'm fighting you one time. That's it. One time. And win or lose, I'm fighting you one time. You try to fight me again, I'm gonna two-hand you, like, right in the face. I don't care." I'm like, "Do you understand?" He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "One time, you get it?" He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "I'm fighting you one time. I need you to nod, wink, whatever. Like, that's it." So we fought and whatever. It was a decent fight. I got the better of him. I'm like, "I'm not fighting you again. You understand?" He's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "I'm telling you, like, I'll just put two-hand you right over the top of the head." And so he's like, "Oh, thanks, man. Thanks." Like, that's stuff that made me, I'm sure you've heard maybe from other guys, but guys are like, "Hey, thanks, man. Thanks for fighting," and the code, whatever you want to call it. There's honor amongst probably 98% of guys.
Before we get going with talking Stanley Cup runs, I want to ask Ed and Tom if they got a question for you. We'll put a pin in the story right now. Go ahead, Tom. You got a question for Rod Dinger?
What do you consider your, or did you have a welcome to the NHL moment, your rookie year?
Well, very good question, Tom. Thank you for asking that. Can't believe it's they've waited so long for to allow you to talk, to be honest with you.
Oh,
I'd be writing that up in my
you, man.
next
It's about you. It's
contract.
not about us.
I have really long answers too, if you hadn't noticed. You could ask me one question, I could
No,
talk
we
for
love
2 hours.
it. We
Oh,
love it.
yeah. Well, I get shushed at home all the time because everyone's heard my story. So, my welcome to the NHL moment. I was playing Detroit at the time. I think I was playing at Fleury and Castles and line up, and it's like Fedorov, Yzerman, and I don't know who the other guy was. Sorry, it could have been Datsyuk maybe, or it's rude of me to say, but I just remember looking and going like, "Holy shit, man!" Like Fedorov and Yzerman, like, what am I doing here? And so that was my, I guess, welcome to the NHL or whatever.
Ed, you're up. Question for Dinga.
Sure. Who is the toughest defenseman that you played up against when when you saw him on D, going to chase out the puck? Who would you say that, give you a run for your money, or you'd be like, man, I just don't like playing against that guy?
Can I have two? Because
Sure, absolutely. Go right ahead.
so Scott Stevens, just because. Why Jersey's D, like Colin White. Whitey was tough too. Man, he was miserable to play against. O'Donnell too, but like they just maul you. And this is back in the hooking really wasn't a penalty. Neither was holding in the corner, so you could like literally just try hump a guy from one corner to the other. And that was kind of my game. So there's a few games where you're like, man, good resistance training when you got like Whitey or O'Donnell like just riding your back when you're trying to get from one corner to the front of the net or whatever. But Scott Stevens, just because we played in the 2001 the finals, and that was the year he was just knocking everyone out, like Willis, Francis, like when they're like trying to get their legs to work. We've all been there. Well, I'm not going to speak for you guys, but I've been there. So he was one, and then the other guy is Adam Foote. So Footy, like, much of playing against him, but playing with him, great guy. Like just Joe Sakic was the quiet leader, and Footy was the sheriff, let's say. So he took me under his wing, and great guy. But he just verbally abused me in the room. Like he invited me over, like, "Hey, you want to come over Monday Night Football?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure." Go to his house. I'm like, "Oh my God, look at this place! It's like a mansion. I'm in a 2-bedroom condo. It was nice, but like whatever." We went with Monday Night Football, a couple beers and chicken wings. Next day at practice, he's like, "Dang, are you fat fuck? How many beers and chicken wings did you have last night?" I'm like, "Dude, like, man, like, where I was at your house, like, what the heck?" But that was just, he was toughing me up. But they didn't practice, so like the beauty of that team, and like talking to my kids and like even other guys, like, not everyone practiced the way they played. And there's very few players, like, I'm gonna play a lot of great players, like Forsberg, Sakic, Bork, Patrick Waugh, you mentioned Fleury, Jordan McGinley. Like, most guys, like the elite players, they practice like they play. Not even on the playoffs, but like you practice hard. Like Patty Waugh, he tried on every shot. Like he didn't want to get scored on. Adam Foote was the same way. So we play, we do our drills, whatever, shooting drills, flow drills, 2-on-1s, 3-on-2s, whatever. And then we'd always play like 5-on-5 in the zone, like off a face off neutral zone. And like Forsberg's out there, and like no one can get the puck from him. It was like the worst game of keep away ever. And like with his shirt off, it looked like a wet noodle with like these huge legs, but like no one could get the puck from him. And then Footy's like, I'd have him. He's just abusing me, like just cross checking me, flipping my helmet, and like just, I'm getting mad, And he's laughing his ass off. And I turn around, like, fucking, like, I wouldn't punch him, but like, I knock him down, and Hartley's like mother effing me and French. And I'm like, guy's been, I'm like, 15th cross checking face wash. And what are you doing, Dave? Well, Kyle listen, Tabernacle. I'm like, fuck. So Adam Foote, he's a miserable prick in practice, games too, but practice, man, I tell you, you know how to get you wherever the pad wasn't, back of the knee, elbow. Yeah, he found it, let's just put it that way.
Thing I got to ask you about Joe Sakic. And not a lot of people have a Joe Sakic story, but do you have one?
Oh yeah, I got plenty.
Oh, here we
Oh
go.
yeah, he no, he was unbelievably conditioned. So I would work out. I work out before practice. Every practice, I go lift weights, ride the bike. I go out early, shoot on the goalie, the backup goalie, and then get bag skated. I guess third and fourth line guys, we got bag skated like pretty good by Hartley. whatever, to the point of like we could go out till 2 in the morning. It didn't matter. We were so conditioned. We were going to do the dots in the middle, like dot to dot to dot back, and the mountain climber from the goal line to blue line back, red line. So anyway, so Sax would work out too, but like he wouldn't do the same workout as me. He'd go up and he'd do cleans, bench press, and pull-ups. And like it was like 3 sets or whatever, just maintaining. I don't know how you do it, but like he would do them and he'd literally get dressed in like 5 minutes. Like literally within 5 minutes and he's on the ice and then he'd take one timer's end of practice and then he was done. And every year at camp, like he was the guy, he was the best conditioned guy. And like the VO2, I wanted to beat him. I was always like a world, like my first year at camp, I was in good condition. My second year, I just took it to another level. Just because you see these guys and you see where they're at, and these are the best players in the world and the best, one of the best teams we were, a couple of years later, whatever. But so I had the best wind gate. Couldn't beat him on the VO2. They stopped me after 14 minutes. But probably my best sacking story is like, great guy, super quiet, super humble. And again, I'm Adam Foote, we had Borky, Rob Blake, all these guys. And so, anyways, Sax has got 999 points career. And I had 16, I think, maybe 12. I don't know, give or take. So we traded for Rob Blake. And then I don't know if we got Ray Bourque yet, but like our D were so good, they dressed 7D. And me and Jeff Hodges on the fourth line. And Audrey's a great guy, like one of the best guys, like 5'11", fought all the heavyweights, but like not the best hockey player. I'm not being rude, but like, you're playing with Sakic and there's a difference. Like, Audrey'd say the same thing about me because we're Wheat King alumni. I love that guy. But the beauty is that like, so picked up these future Hall of Famers is that they dressed the two of us on the fourth line. And the first period, they double shift Forsberg, first and third. And then the second period, they double shift Sakic. So I was here, I had 8 goals. I averaged like 5.5 minutes, 6 minutes a game. But I think if you looked at it, like seven were assisted by Forsberg or Sakic. And then one was assisted by Brian Rolston. I only know this because it was on the power play. And when there was an injury, I'd get on the second power play and I was a tip in on Marty Brodeur. So I think I had 2 career goals against Marty Brodeur, 2 against Grant Fuhr. One against Patrick Waugh. I scored on Hall of Famers. Maybe I should have played against more Hall of Famers. I would have had more than whatever 12 career goals I had. But anyways, so before the game, Sax is talking with like all the good players, like, oh, let's get it done in the first period, it's 1,000 point. And so I go over him, I go, hey Sax. He's like, hey, what's up? I'm like, hey, take a look around this room. He's like, what? I'm like, take a look around this room. He's like, what are you talking about? I go, how many future Hall of Famers do you think are in here? Six, eight? He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, no, seriously, like six or eight? Like, how many future Hall of Famers? What are you talking about? I'm like, you better get it done the first period because you got to play with me in the second and you don't want my name on that. And he was like, fuck you, whatever. And sure enough, he didn't score in the first period to get a point. Second period, goes in, tries to take a shot, bobbles it, tries to take another shot, puck bobbles, turns back, throws a back pass. Finger comes flying in, clap bomb, I score. So I score the goal on this 1,000 point. And I'm like, oh yeah. And I go to get the puck. Adam Foote body checks me out of the way, grabs the puck, and he's like, they're not cheering for you, you fucking asshole. And I'm like, I know, man. I'm just so excited. I'm trying to get the puck for him, whatever. So, anyways, after the game, we go for dinner and all the guys. And yeah, the game's over. I was like, hey, Sax. He's like, what's up? I was like, hey, you think you'd sign my stick? And he's like, yeah, sure. So that team, it was like, I don't know what the stick budget was. Like, probably half, maybe half the team was using those synergies and stuff. Sax had a two-piece. Like, he had the Easton shaft and the synergy blade, the composite. And I was using a Easton Ultralight with a Christian blade. Doesn't matter. But guys, it's a good team. So, like, guys are signing autographs all the time. Hey, like, I have jerseys, like, sticks. I was like, hey, Patty, can you get a stick signed? Sure. So I was like, hey, Sax, you can sign my stick? He's like, yeah, sure. He's like, I'll just sign you one of mine. I was like, no, can you sign my stick? And he's like, why? I said, well, I was talking to this dealership and told him, he said, if I got your autograph on my stick, I'd get a free Tahoe for the rest of the year. He's like, what? I'm like, no, man, someone I scored with. He's like, you're an idiot. I'm like, yeah, I know, I'm an idiot, but this is awesome. Going to be the Hall of Fame for the rest of my life because of you. Thanks, man. I'm gonna enjoy it. So I gave it to him for a good 2 weeks. Hey, Sax, number 1,000. How's that? He's like, he's just laughing. His wife was like, Debbie, she's pissing herself laughing. She's like, oh my God, of all the people. So great guy, though. Unbelievable.
Dinger, you got to set the record straight. If you had gotten that puck, would you have kept
No,
it?
no chance.
I had
But
to
I would have
ask.
handed it. Yeah, I know, but I would have handed it to him. I would have made sure I would have turned and looked at the camera and been like, here you go. Like, get in the picture.
Now that is a Hall of Fame move right there.
Yeah, smart. Take the extra in the movie, you know.
Yeah,
Got to be in the right place and right time. Because we took the team photo. And I didn't realize this till after a couple years later. I was in the NHLPA offices and they had all the pictures from all the Stanley Cup winners. I look at the Colorado Avalanche one, and me and Rob Blake are just having a beer. Like, we're on the ice and we're already having a beer. And I did a Hockey Night in Canada interview, and like, we're even thinking about the team picture. Like, oh, hey, you gotta get in the picture. So me and Blakey get in the back, and the angle they took the picture, like, you can't only see maybe half of my face. So I was like, okay, if I ever win again, I'm gonna be front, like, front row and center. So I don't know if you've ever seen the Lightning one, but I was like right next to the cup. I'm like, not making that mistake again. So I made sure the extra in the movie was like front row and like right next to the movie stars, you know, the Stanley Cup. So,
Tom, we got to ask Dinger a question from you about the Avalanche run.
well, actually, what I wanted to know, not even about the Avalanche, was what's something about the NHL lifestyle that fans don't realize or understand?
You don't realize. Well, you don't have to do your own laundry, so that's pretty good. Then if you treat the trainers really good, they'll treat you like gold. They do everything for you. They unpack your stuff, but if you pack your bag, you put it on the trolley for them. You do the trainers in Colorado, they open up a Krispy Kreme. I bring them in Krispy Kreme every day. Smokey and Smoke was the one guy, Smokey and Mark, Marky Mark, we called him. I bring him Krispy Kreme and every day. And I'm like, Smoke, I'm gonna make you laugh. So I literally wheel in every day. And he's like, you're not gonna make me laugh. I'm like, okay. So I wheel my shorts down. I just have a jock strap on. And I like pretend to drop something and start stretching or doing jumping jacks. And he'd start like giggling and laughing. So we treated the trainers. So when I got traded, I don't know how many shafts I got 2 sets of laundry. I got all my equipment, helmets. So up until like this past year, my kids were using my laundry bags from Colorado. So that's one thing. Another thing is, I mean, you stay in really nice hotels. Like, I don't stay in those hotels anymore. Like, budget with 3 kids doesn't support that. So, and I want to retire at some point, but the more like the nicer hotels you stay at, the more expensive everything is. So there's actually a good story. I learned this because George Laroque, great guy, but his first year he's like staying, I think it was the Pan Pacific in Vancouver, downtown Vancouver. It's like 5-star restaurant. He goes for breakfast and he gets an orange juice. And the nicer place you're at, like, the smaller the glass. So the glass was like literally like one of those little like a double shooter cup, like, you know what I mean? Like little skinny. So like, hey, he pounds that down. And okay, you want to roll? And he's like, oh sure, absolutely. So he dusts down like 8 of them. Well, they're like $8 a orange juice. So gets his bill and he's like, what the. So after that, I heard that one. And I always ask, free refills or you got to pay for them? So, I mean, that's another thing. I don't know, when you fly commercial, or yeah, when you got, you know, like when you have your own plane, or the team, not your own plane, but when you have a team plane, like the regular rules don't exist. Like, they don't exist. So we're in Colorado, we were playing this game, Age of Empires. We're at a card game too, but we got on this thing. We're playing Age of Empires. So, like, 6 of us, we got our laptops out. We're playing against each other. The seats are back. Like, you don't have to have the tray tables up and the seats. And it'd be like in Florida and Tampa, we literally, like, sometimes we'd park, like, right on the tarmac. Like, literally go through the fence, like, park on the side, and then just walk up to the plane. And yeah. I didn't think the wand was on, to be honest with you. It'd be like, give me one of these. No, you're good. No problem. And we cleared customs one time in Buffalo, maybe. No, I forget. I think it was Buffalo. We were coming from somewhere or something, and like we literally land. The guy comes on the plane. Everyone got their passport. He walks through, looks at everyone's passport. We all filled out the things, and I guess he was a huge Dave Vaynerchuk fan. So like the traveling secretary guy, the child, he handed him a Vanderchek jersey and a stick, and the guy was like, "All right, see you later. Everything looks good." And, I mean, we weren't doing anything anyway, so I mean, there's a couple of things. Hopefully, that answered your question, Tom.
Ed, you're up.
Sure.
Oh boy.
Chris, what was your favorite rink to play in?
Oh man, professionally?
Yeah, professionally, sure.
Oh, tough. Tampa was really good, like in the playoffs. Like when we obviously when I first got there, we weren't very good. So I mean, the fans were good. People take for granted like all the talk now about the tax, advantage and break, and like teams like nobody gave a shit like 20 years ago when the teams were like Florida was terrible. Nobody wanted to go there. No one wanted to go to Tampa. So Tampa was unreal in the playoffs. Like everyone's talking about the Canadian fans in Calgary. I played in Calgary in 97. We had like 14,000 people in the building, and it was like you could hear a pin drop. And Tampa, we had 23,000 people. We had 20,000 on the plaza outside. I mean, that place was great. Going to play in Chicago was I missed the old stadium by a year. I think it was a year, but still the new stadium, like when they started cheering during the anthem and you can't hear the anthem singer. I don't have a favorite, but I got a couple of top ones. Colorado was unbelievable too. Edmonton, the old Northlands, you go to play there, and just growing up in Edmonton, the ice there was unbelievable. Like I felt like Joe Sakic. I wasn't, but man, you felt like instantly like 10 kilometers faster. LA, I got to play in the old Great Western Forum. That was pretty cool. Skating around and warm up, and like I don't know, like shooting pucks, but I'm looking around, I'm like, hey, it's Kurt Russell. It's Goldie Hawn, that's John Candy. Like, yeah, it's pretty cool. All I wanted to do was go to the Forum Club after because all the guys were talking about, oh, I had a Forum Club, like all the movie stars. Like, I just wanted to go see movie stars. And we lost by a goal or something, and Sutter was pissed. He was like, everyone on the bus. And so we were allowed to drink at the hotel bar, but everyone had to go on the bus because he knew. And that was the last year. And then they weren't playing there anymore. I was pretty disappointed about that, if we're being honest. New York, Madison Square Garden is another. Same thing, you're skating around, it's just like movie stars and celebrities. So I don't really have one, but those would be top of my head. Those are the top ones. Toronto, I played in the old Maple Leaf Garden. That place was pretty cool. I had my rookie year, I had 8 shots one game, I think it was. My center was Andrew Castles, and I like couldn't turn, but I could skate fast. And he just crossed up it perfectly and like the old Joe Louis, same thing, like the bumpers, whatever they call the bumper on the bottom. And if he just shot it hard, it'd just come right back out in the slot. So literally, I had 8 one-timers that game. The only problem is Cujo was in that. So I didn't score, and he was pretty good, but I drilled him with a couple up high. But that old, like in Toronto, the benches, I don't know how they never had problems because the benches, like I'm sitting on the bench, and like this guy's got like a suit on, he's got a beer and a hot dog. He's like, telling me like get the hell out of his way basically because he could literally the fans for the premium seats would literally just walk like right on the bench, like right behind the bench. So that was pretty neat. So yeah, I have a few buildings. Not one per se, but
I got a follow-up
what's
question.
that?
What was your thought about playing in Buffalo? We've had a lot of people that say that was not their favorite building to play in.
Well, I didn't play in the old one.
Okay.
So the new one, I don't know. Like a building's a building, but like when your team's good and the place is rocking and the atmosphere is good, I mean it's good. But when your team's not that good, it's not that great, right? So, yeah, I don't know. I didn't. It was a decent building. Good chicken wings after, I'll tell you that. Cold.
Digger, I got to ask you about that first Stanley Cup. You lift it up, and what's the thought? Is it a well of emotions? Is it like stuff that you dreamt of doing, or how did it hit you?
Relief, I think, to be honest with you. Well, first of all, yeah, because I think we won 3-1, if I remember correctly. I think we got up 2-0. We got to 2-1 or 3-0 or 3-1. I know Tang's had 2 goals, Alex Tange. But like everyone, talks like all the talent we had on that team in Colorado, like Zach and Forsberg, Hajduk, Dingman, no, I'm kidding. Bork, Blake. But like we got up 2-3-1 or whatever it was, and we didn't even try and make a play for 2 periods. It was literally off the glass, dump it in. Like we must have iced it 50 times, and We gave up one prime scoring chance because I've watched that game a few times, like on the NHL Network and when they play the classic games. And it was actually it was Peter Sikora got around Borky, and Patty Waugh made an unbelievable save. And so it was just like the last minute, because I think we must have iced it 10 times. I don't, whatever. I was just like, ice it. Like, so the last minute took, I don't know, man, it felt like a half an hour. So just, waiting for it to 10, 9, 8, and, just winning and stuff. And then, obviously the whole thing, the classy gesture by Sachs to give it to Borgie. I guess they talked about it because there's always about winning it for win one for Ray. And Ray was like, screw that, man, win it for yourself. My name's going to be right next to yours. And, him handing it to Ray, Gary Bettman, Raymond Bourque, he waited 25 years or 20 years or whatever. So him handing it to Ray, and then when I got whatever, how many guys down the line? When I got it, I just think, hey, my wife, my family, I think I knew where they were, so I just was like, hoisting it, trying to find them, which was very difficult to do, but pretty neat, pretty. I did a Hockey Night in Canada interview, so that was pretty cool. So once he found me, it was Ronnie McLean. I met him, and we had the same agent, so we went on a golf trip, and so we had a few together, and he liked me. So yeah, I did an interview out of all these guys, like all these star players. And I remember I was like looking for my parents, couldn't find them. I was like sending like the security or the team people. I'm like, oh yeah, where's my family? Whatever, they're already in the locker room hanging out. So yeah, it was pretty surreal, I guess. I don't know. Like, just whatever, like something you've dreamt of doing. Like, playing the NHL is one thing, it's a dream come true, and it's very difficult to do and get there and stay there. And then just winning, like, just for the sole fact that Ray Bourque had played 20 years or I don't know, 20, 21 years. And like, I remember in the playoffs, like, every practice was optional for the star players, for the third and fourth line guys, it wasn't, but whatever. And he could Bourque, he'd come out for every practice. He'd only stay for like 15 or 20 minutes, but I remember after a few practices, like, because we were kind of buddies, like, I don't know, he liked me, and I'm like kind of hanging out with Ray Bourque a little bit. And I'm like, hey, Bourque. He's like, what's up? And I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, why are you out here? He's like, what? And I'm like, why are you out here? Like, take the option, man. I'm like, aren't you like 40, 42 or 41? Well, first of all, I'm 40. He's like, second of all, if I don't come out and skate, I might not be able to get out of bed the next day because my back's so fucked. So just F off. And I'm like, I don't care, man. Like, whatever. But he'd come out, like, he knew it was his last year because we traded for him the year before, and he wasn't sure if he was going to come back, and he decided to come back. And I think he's just enjoying being on the ice. Like, it was so, like, there's so many different things about that run that, he had a 40-year-old guy that's just, when he won, he's just jumping up and down and crying. And so it's pretty cool. It's pretty, I'm very lucky to be on the teams I was on and the players I was with. And one thing I will say is that those guys are, everyone's had good people in their life and bad people. And if you want to model how to be and the player to be, like those guys, like, Theo's one thing. Like, Theo, everything he went through, and, I never see a guy play like that after 12 or 14 fucking Cranberries, man. He got 2 goals and an assist or whatever. And he was just feisty and whatever. Like, Colorado was just the best players in the world, and future Hall of Famers, they just treated me like gold. Unbelievable. So
Now, your day with the Stanley Cup the first time, what'd you do with
party.
it?
So it's I just went around to a few different places, went for lunch and rented a bus. And I'm a drummer, so I had this band, Mustard Smile. I found them through, I forget, but great guys. So they just played cover tunes. And so I rented out like a ballroom at this golf course. Or no, yeah, Royal Glenora is it was like a club. And so the cup guy shows up. I don't know if anyone's talking about this, but it's not the same guys. It's not Mike Bold and Phil Pritchard. It's a couple other guys that travel around in the summer. Excuse me, like, you think it'd be the best job ever, but it's really not, because you literally go from like party to party to, like, that's all you do. You land, you're like, okay, what's the day? You wheel around, go to the zoo, go to the hospital, go to the local arena, take pictures, and you're the guy that's gotta like be the bad guy. That's kind of what they're there for. So anyways, a guy lands and he's like, hey, I have a hotel room if you want, or I can stay at your place. It's up to you. But if I leave, the cup leaves. I'm like, yeah, I got an extra room. So Anyway, so we, we do the day, we wheel around, and we're going to the party or whatever. So I got a bunch of beer and wine and stuff and some appetizers. And she's going to put the jacket and the white gloves on. I'm like, it's pretty casual. Like, you don't need the jacket. So he's like, well, I'll bring it just in case. And he was a younger guy, a school teacher. So this was like his summer job. And anyway, so, about halfway through the night, I'm up on stage and I'm playing the drums. My buddy wants a drink out of it. The rule is, it's your cup, whatever you want to do. And so he's like, is it okay? And I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. So my buddy's like, they're filling it up with beer and on the dance floor, and everyone's lining up, drinking out, and I'm playing. And later on the night, I look over. So we had like a little table where the cup was to take pictures. It was, nice under a light and stuff. And I look over, my buddy's got the Hall of Fame jacket on and the white glove like this, and he's taking a picture, and he's smiling like this. I'm like, okay, this is gonna be a good party. So, anyways, that's kind of what I did, and then went back to my apartment and had some friends back, and I, told my wife, I'm like, I kind of want to be left alone. And I was like, what? And I'm like, I just want to be left alone. I just want to. So I literally just sat there and had the cup on the table, and I'm just like spinning it around, looking in the middle and just looking at all the names. And, being an Edmonton guy, obviously the Islanders and their dynasty, and before that, Montreal, and then the Oilers, all the names, like, okay, how many guys were on the team, like, year after year? And pretty surreal, like, when you just, Mike Bossy, Brad Trottier, assistant coach, Colorado, and, Gretzky, Messier, Patrick Waugh going a lot down the line, and, like, my name's going to be on there. So definitely took a moment and took a lot of pictures, but took a moment just to, like, soak it in. And yeah, it's pretty
So take us to the bridge between from Colorado to Tampa.
well, Colorado, we won, and then I was out with a buddy, my wife, and some friends. And my buddy was joking. It was the second day of the draft. He's like, well, let me know if I get traded. I'm like, yeah, same for me. So this is back when people turn their phones off. So I turned my phone on Sunday morning. I'd call it Sunday morning, but it was closer to noon. It was probably noon, but whatever. We'll call it Sunday morning. I had like 14 voicemails. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, someone died or something. Like, this isn't good. And, hey, Chris, Pierre Lacroix, Colorado Avalanche, thank you for your service, whatever. And then, Jimmy Rutherford. So I got traded to call Carolina. So I was like, yeah, okay. Ron Francis called me. And so anyways, went to Carolina for about 6 months and hurt my groin in training camp. Supposed to play more, wasn't playing as much as I was coming off playing like 9, 10 minutes in the finals. I had two assists, and I really thought it was my time to like step up in the lineup, and that wasn't really happening. And so then my agent had talked to Jimmy Rutherford a couple times, and then I was on the road. We were in Chicago. It was like a 2-game road trip, so I had like nothing, like a suit. I think I had one suit, two dress shirts, and a couple pairs of underwear, enough to get me through. And got traded on the road, so I went to Tampa and showed up there with no clothes, and went to the mall and bought some flip flops and shorts, and was very nice to the trainers because I bring my stuff and they do my laundry for me with the rest of the boys' stuff. So yeah, it was kind of I got to Tampa. When I got to Tampa, it was towards the trade deadline there. At the time, Marty St. Louis, I think he broke his leg. Freddie Monahan was hurt. Tim Taylor, like, they had a ton of guys hurt, and like guys were still getting hurt, and they were calling guys up from like the East Coast, like literally to play. And like, this one guy was bitching about something. He got called up to the East Coast. I'll never forget the trainer. I was like, shut the f like, you're in the NHL. Like, take your stuff and beat it. So that was pretty cool. It was pretty, stayed at the Marriott downtown right across from the rink. And it's a totally different experience when you're like, there's the ocean right there in the water, and it's sunny out, and there's a rooftop pool. And I golf, like, I started golfing again. Now my kids are older, but didn't really golf that much at the time. But when I first got there, like, guys were like, we'd have like, we'd after practice, we that was a good thing about Tortorella, is that, he's a hard guy, but it was a country club when I got there. Like, literally, guys would go there to retire, and like, we go do video meetings, and like, there's one guy, Vinny Prospel, and he was whatever. He like would be in the meeting, and he's already ready to go golfing because he had his tee time. So he's in his golf shirt and stuff. And we're like, common sense here a little bit. Like, just got pounded 5-2. Like stay in your workout stuff, do the video, and then go change or whatever. So, anyways, yeah, it's kind of it was a good, neat experience, to say the least.
So before we get rolling with the Tampa stuff, Tom, you got a question for Dinger?
Yeah, I want to know, do you have a coach that you had that you think helped you the most in your career?
Bobby Lozen Jr. was really good. He was an intense guy. I showed up at camp. I had three earrings on the bottom and one up top. I thought it was Tommy Lee because I was a drummer and Tommy Lee had the anyways, I showed up at camp and he was like, "Hey, Dinger." And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Nice earrings." I was like, "Thanks." He's like, "You don't think you're keeping those fucking things?" And I was like, "I don't know. Not even gonna play here. Get the fucking things out of here." I was like, "Okay, because I'm not wearing having earrings anymore." So, anyways, Lozy was super intense, but it was good. I liked it. Like, man, he was a scary guy. Kelly McCrimmon, like, he wasn't a coach, but no, Kramer was big. Big reason why, I made it. I think that team, the way they ran their organization was, and Kramer was scary, man. I found out after he had this little leather, two-seater couch, so he had his desk, and then you go in and talk to him. So the guys that didn't go to school, you had to check in at 10 a.m. Just go check in. Hey, I'm not like he'd kind of look at you and see if you're like hungover or just get you out of bed, basically. But like, if guys miss curfew or something, like if you had to go into his office. And I found out after he sawed the feet off or the legs off the couch. So he sawed it off so the couch sat flat on the ground, and then he had his desk up higher. So it was literally like you're sitting there and he's like, "Yeah, what time did you get home last night?" I'm like, 10. "Is that right, eh?" You just sit there, and I'm like, "Yep." Like, I knew I was home, but I'm like, I don't know, was I home? Like, so I remember after, like, guys were telling me the story about the couch and stuff, and I asked him, like, "Kermit, like, why would you do that?" He's like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "Every time, man, you give me an answer. Is that right, eh?" And he said that. I'm like, "Why would you do that?" He's like, "Well, I just wanted to give you a second to think about your answer, and if you wanted to change it." I'm like, "Man, I almost changed it like 5 times because I was shitting my pants because I wasn't even like miss curfew." So yeah, Kermit was he was a big part. Mike Foligno was great in the minors. I had him and Jay Wells, and they were probably the first two coaches that asked me how I was doing because I had called up and fought Probert twice. Hardly calls me in for the game. "Yeah, I do the job. We'll keep here. Blah blah blah." After the game, calls me in. "You have a guy that's guy's coming back from injury. We're sending you back down. You got to lose 10 pounds. I see you're 245. Can't play in the NHL, 245. So you can ride the bike for an hour and you're going to lose 10 pounds." And I'm like, I wanted to quit hockey because I just fought Probert twice. I just played year before Calgary, 245. And this is when, like, George Laroque and, like, George was, like, played at 250 somewhere. And I was, like, 8% body fat. I wasn't, like, fat, I was in shape 245. So I go down. I told my wife and I was like, "I think I'm done." She's like, "Well, just, don't worry about it, just whatever." And Jay Wells and Mike Foligno were the first, like, "How's it going? How you doing?" I said, "I think I'm done." "Like, what do you mean?" I'm like, "I think I'm done, man. I just fought Proby twice and I got to lose 10 pounds, ride the bike." And I'll never forget, Mike goes, "Listen, ride the bike. You know how to lose the weight." He's like, "You're going to play here." He's like, "I can't control that fucking asshole up there is going to do, but down here, you're going to play. So just ride the bike." And so I think, that was huge because I don't know. I mean, I was on the verge of, like, you just kind of like, "Man, what more do I have to do?" And so that was great. Torts was good too. Torts was hard on everybody. And yeah, I don't have like a specific answer if you guys haven't noticed. I don't know. I can't just do one.
Yeah,
Sorry. I'll try.
I love
Next
it.
question. I'll try and give you like really short, definitive answers.
Ed, you're on the clock.
Well, what was your typical workout routine when you started in the league to get into shape, coming into training camp? And what'd you do later on in your career to maintain your body and to keep up with the physical demands of how you played?
Was drafted by Calgary, and so they'd have us come out for the summer, like 6 weeks, the top picks. And we do the skating treadmill. So it was like a treadmill but I had the synthetic ice, and that thing, they get it going, and they bring it at like a 40-degree angle. So you do that, and you do bench press and bike and whatever. And myself and Jerome McGinley, they wanted Iggy to work out with me because we're both from Edmonton. And Jerome was a great guy and unbelievably hard worker. And so we worked out together, and we kind of stepped up our training, did more than, because the team would send you a workout program. And, but it's not really like super specific to what you need. So I took my training really like super seriously. And so that was, like 6 days a week. I would do, well, 6 days a week. And then Saturdays, I would run the stairs. And our trainer would have this, this waist harness. He'd have a rope, and like you were dragging him up the stairs, but like you're sprinting up the stairs and he's providing resistance. And, guys would puke after three, and I'd do 10. And then, Brad McCrimmon, Kelly's brother, I was talking to him, and he was like, "You got to go see this Charles Poliquin guy." And his nickname was Beast because he was just a beast. He was unbelievable in the gym, unbelievable shape. And we go back, work the hockey school. He's like, "Diggers, we're going for a run." And like at the time, he was like 35 maybe, or I don't know. And like, I'm like, "Hey, we're doing push-ups or whatever." And he's like, "You got to go see this Charles Poliquin guy." And so I went and saw Charles, and he totally, like, he was different than any trainer I had. It was like 2 days on, one day off, one day on, one day off. You do your weights in the morning, you do your cardio in the afternoon, and you eat high protein, have a workout, have a shake, have lunch, workout, have a shake. And so I went and saw him. Every trainer I had, I always ask him, like, "Hey, what does this do? What does this do?" And some trainers would get pissy, like, "Well, if you don't do it, don't do it." I'm like, that's not what I'm like. I was always like in top 10 in conditioning. Took my training very seriously, but I'm like, I just want to understand for myself. And Charles was the first guy. I'm like, "Do you mind me asking?" And he was like, "Not at all." And I was kind of like, "Do you mind me asking?" Like every other trainer, I'd ask him and they get all pissy. And he's like, "No, I wish I had more guys like you. It's good to understand." And but the confidence he had, I'm like, "No, I need to train 6 days a week." He's like, "No, you don't. You're overtraining." And I'm like, "No, I need to." And he's like, "No." So he's like, "Here's the deal." So his fee was like 350 an hour, I believe. So for the summer, it was like 15 grand. So he's like, "Go home, give it 2 weeks, but follow the diet." Like it was like super, Atkins or whatever you want to call it, high protein. Like I was always like, "Eat four pieces of toast in the morning." No, you need protein. Have an omelet, four egg omelet, scrambled eggs, whatever. So I went home and lost 10 pounds within 2 weeks, but I wasn't like, super tired or anything. I'd seen other nutritionists and stuff had gone on diets and been exhausted, and with him, I wasn't. And that totally changed. So that was my second year. And after my first year in Colorado, so I go back to camp, and like, I was, what's the word? I was never ripped. I didn't have good metabolism. I was born with really bad metabolism, but I went to camp. I was 232. Like, you could see the veins in my legs, my arms. It was like, all the guys were like, "Holy shit, man. Like, what have you been doing?" I got on the ice, and guys were like, the same group of guys in Edmonton, like Whitney and Gimlin, all these guys were like, "Holy shit, what'd you do this summer?" They went to Colorado. I was doing the shakes after the games, and all of a sudden, the trainer, or actually our masseuse, Greg Orio, great guy, East German guy, he was making shakes for everybody. So the whole team was having shakes after practice and after games and stuff. So, yeah, that's kind of, I guess, how I evolved. Now I still work out, but it's like to fit in my clothes. So my training has changed quite substantially. Still do it, just can't lift the same and same duration.
So, Dinger, bring us back to that Tampa run with for the second Stanley Cup. Like, things that you remember that stick out in your head. Was there less pressure this time now that you had won, already won?
Ooh, I don't know. I never felt pressure the first time, to be honest with you. I love playing the playoffs. I wish like the regular season was. I remember like some games, I'm like, "God, can we get to the playoffs?" And like maybe I wouldn't play during the regular season because they always try out some younger guys. My career went along, but in the playoffs, I knew I was going to play. And like kind of a short way to answer that is that the year before we lost to Jersey in five games, and we had some great young players, like Lecavalier and Richards and Dan Boyle and so on. And I'd moved up to the second line, I believe it was, against Jersey because some of those guys were struggling. And so we played, we lost in triple overtime to Jersey, and they went on to win the cup. And we're like, we could like We took Jersey to five. We could play with them. We were just too young and inexperienced. So the next year, we were like, we could win. As the season went along and we went on a run, we had some ups and downs, but we went on a run. Like Johnny Graham, our backup, won like nine straight. And we just, I had a friend of a friend, he's a buddy, Tex, and I had a stag's ticket planned. And I thought we'd go like two rounds. So I like had this, we're going to Vegas. At the first round, he's like, yeah, you probably want to move it back. He's like, you match up good against Montreal after we beat the Islanders. And yeah, you don't beat Montreal. I was like, yeah, you match up pretty good. And sure enough, as we went on, whatever. So there wasn't any pressure. It was fun. It just, you go on a run. And like, so both teams, we'd stay in the hotel the night before. And so, like, literally, you're just kind of to yourself and the team. So we literally, like, the first round of the playoffs was awesome because, there's two games. Well, there's more than two games, but you're watching like one game and the next game, and it's all the guys were playing cards and just hanging out in the hotel and just playing hockey. And it was literally like I didn't talk to anyone outside of my wife for 2 months, I think it was. I'm like, I'm not dealing with tickets, I'm not dealing with anything. I'm just playing hockey, and it was fun. Like it was so both times we won, we were down 3-2. And then we had to go on the road and win game six to come back home for game seven. So we were down 3-2 to Calgary, and some of the boys were nervous. And as a gift, some of the girls had bought my wife for me T-bar or G-string. So I'm like, I'm going to bring it to the rink. And if guys are nervous, I'm going to do something. So looking around the room, and like, a few guys were like, look like you're gonna shit their pants. So I'm like, okay. So I gotta make sure no one's around. I throw it on, I go in the locker room. Like, okay, guys, this we're gonna do a warm up. Just get on the whiteboard and just had nothing else on other than the G string and drop the same thing, like tend to drop the dry erase marker bend over. I was like, oh my God, whatever. And started doing some stretching and the guys were laughing. So actually that was before game seven, sorry. But I'm like, if this doesn't work, I'm going to be crucified. But I just, there was no pressure. Game six, like it was, let's just go and have a good warm up, have a good first shift. The longer the game goes along, there's no pressure on us. So, yeah, I never felt, maybe, I know other guys maybe did, but I don't know. You just worry about what you have to do and believe in your team. And it's the beauty of the sport, man. It's, you need everybody. You need, every year there's guys, you look at the playoffs, there's every year there's guys that step up that maybe shouldn't have. Like Ruslan Fedotenko in game seven had two goals. Like Feds grew up like outside of Chernobyl, like not far from Chernobyl. The guy's an age in 20 years. He's like, hey, how's it going? Yeah. I like saw him like 3 years ago, man. The guy still doesn't grow facial hair, his cheek, rosy cheeks, and like looks the same. Guy's an age, man. So but he was nervous before game seven. He was one of the guys. He like had that look and guy goes out and scores two goals. So yeah.
So was Torts pro or con on the G string?
I don't think he knew about it till after. He he was hard, but like I don't know if you ever heard the Andre Waugh story where you guys ever hear this one?
No.
Oh my God. So we played Philadelphia in the conference finals and it was game six. Yeah, game six, we're up. So turnover, they scored 30 seconds ago and they score in double overtime, overtime, I forget which one, doesn't matter, but we got to get on playing. Guys are like, we punched our ticket to the finals. Now we got to go back for game seven. And excuse me. So we get on the plane and, guys are disappointed. So, you'd have a beer or two, whatever. And I was in the card game in the back. But as we're taking off, you hear this. And like, oh my God, Mary Fay went down, one of the stewardesses. So, like, again, when you're on a charter, regular rules don't apply. So the like doctors are sprinting like 40-degree angle, they're sprinting down the aisle, like, oh my God, what happened or whatever. And we're literally at the back, like literally there's the washroom, the washrooms, and then they're serving like Mary Faye's like laying there, like, is she dead? Is she okay? So she just fainted, like whatever. It was like super hot that day. And anyway, so she was okay. Like, thank God, whatever. But so we're like helping serve food because there's only two stewardesses, so there's one for the front, one for the back, and we got a man down, woman, person, let's say man down, man. So anyway, so we're So I'll never forget, we had beef tips or chicken Marcello were like the two options. And so we're helping, like we're serving food, you know? So Marty St. Louis, man, Louis was egging Andre Waugh, and Waugh's the great guy. And he'd take things too far sometimes, but whatever. So he's like, yeah, put the apron on. Waugh's like, yeah. He's like, oh yeah, take your shirt off too. Takes the shirt off, he's got the apron on. You want beef tips? You want chicken Marcello? He's like, go get gear down. He's like, really? He's like, oh yeah. So he's like, buck naked, the apron on. Butt cheeks, you know, beef tips, you want chicken Marcello, and serving everybody. And he's like, go serve torts. He's like, no, I can't. He's like, oh yeah, it'll be okay. Marty's like, oh yeah. Louis's like, it'll be okay. And so he didn't go serve torts, but Jay Feaster's our GM. Jay's a great guy. He's like, you want beef tips or chicken Marcello? And torts just having turned out. He's like, Jesus Christ, Andre, what the fuck? But he was like, try not to laugh. Like, it's funny. Like, so anyways, that was huge because just totally. Lighten the mood because everyone's devastated, right? Because so, no pressure after that. I didn't want to drop a service tray of beef tips.
So game seven, you guys end up winning, and you get your picture in the right spot this time.
Yeah.
Hall of Fame move. So, thoughts after you win the second time with that group compared to the first group?
Well, I don't know. I don't think it was different. It was just great. I just want to make sure when I got the cup, I could go take a little skate. And there's like, people don't realize like it's different now because technology, but I mean, there's cords everywhere, you know, camera cords and power cords, whatever you want to call them. And so you like stepping over them. And like Andre and I were like hold hands, like singing and just going for a skate, just screwing around. And, but we go for the, you know, Hulk Hogan just recently passed away, and so like there's so many celebrities that are at our games in Tampa. I'm sure they were for earlier, but like Scott Stapp, like Capriati, David Wells are in the wives' room having beers, and but Hulk was at every game, and his daughter was like trying to get her singing career going, so she'd sing the anthem, and so like the first game he does this whole they push out this little like a little ring. So he does, oh, Hulkamania, excited, prayers, vitamins, you know, and rips his shirt. He goes on for like 2 minutes, and the production guy's like, get him off. Like, because puck drops like seven. Let me see, game starts seven, puck drops 7:07. And he's like, get him off. And he rips his shirt. He comes out, they bring him off. They're like, next time you have 30 seconds. You go over 30 seconds, your daughter's not singing the anthem because she was singing the anthem, right? And like, she's not singing the anthem anymore. So, anyways, we win. And like Hulkster's on the ice, him and like Knobs, one of the nasty boys. And the Knobs guy like had knee surgery, so he's got like his crutch and he's limping around. But they go to get in the team photo. So like we're in the team photo, and like Hulkster's in there, and of course, like get those fucking guys out of there, whatever. So it was kind of funny. So Andre Waugh got a good picture with him. I think he like tore his jersey a little bit, you know. So yeah, it's same feeling. This whatever was awesome. Just unbelievable.
Thomas, question for Dinger.
What team had the wildest celebration? I mean, you see nowadays it's everything's on TV or video. You see the Panthers, you saw almost everything they actually did. Who had the wildest celebration? Was it Tampa or was it just Carlton?
Colorado,
Yeah.
Colorado. Well, there's one player that had the best celebration, Sean Poutine. We were in Colorado, and he'd hurt a guy, wore his equipment for 23 hours after winning, so he wanted to beat it. So pose, we win, full gear, goes to the bar, like no skate guards, like skates, to everything, helmet. We go to the bar, they won't let him in. We go to this place called the Chop House, and my wife was like handing him beers. He's standing outside by the railing because they wouldn't let him in because he had skates on. They thought he was a fan. I'm like, no, that's like a player. So Colorado was, yeah, it was cool. Like it wasn't crazy. Like neither one was really crazy. Tampa was you have a parade, and I remember like Colorado. So we got to be friends with a few bands like Godsmack and Stained, and so the band Stained was in town. They just went number one. They sold 750,000 records for their album Break the Cycle. So I was good to be friends with the drummer and guitarist. I mean, I knew the other guys in the bar in the band, but John Mysaki and Mike Mushok. So they come to the they come to the cup party after the parade, and like they're in awe because like they're like Massachusetts guys, like Springfield, like Ray Bourque, Bruins, So they get a picture with Ray Bourque, and then they, I hand the cup, and John hoists the cup. He calls his dad. He's like, "Oh my God!" He's almost crying. He's like, "I just met Ray Bourque, and I just hoisted the cup." He's like almost in tears. I'm like, "Dude, you just went number one, man. You sold 750,000 records. Your company gave him presidential Rolexes." And but it was kind of funny. So like, there's a restaurant, the Chop House, and then down the stairs, it's probably not the same, but there was this piano bar. It's called Sing Sing, and it had two dueling pianos and a drum set in the middle. So it was like, people go for like stags and whatever, you request songs and they play. And so I played drums, so I got up and played. And at the cup on stage in Martin School, it was like people are trying to drink out. He's just dumping beer all over people and stuff. And anyway, so I go to get John Wysocki on stage, and like they look at him, he's got like a full sleeve and eye ring, and they're looking at him like, "Who the hell is this guy?" My wife's like, "It's John, he's my number one, whatever." And guys like look at him, "Can you really play?" And then starts playing, and they're like, "Oh, okay, you're good." Yeah, man, he's my number one Billboard. So that was a pretty good party. Yeah, I don't know. Nothing too crazy now. You gotta hand it to Marchand and them. We'll see how they are in training camp, because they definitely had a lot of fun. But yeah, they played it up too. But
Ed,
you
you're
should enjoy
up.
yourself.
All right, who was your favorite player to play with or to watch? When you're sitting on the bench and you looked out on the ice and like, man, that guy is just awesome to watch.
I mean, younger Mark Messier, Wayne Gretzky. Got to play against Eric Lindros. I checked him for one game when I was in Calgary, and I was 245, and I tried and hit him. It was like hitting a brick wall. So he was, yeah, he was big and he was fast and just mean and could play and could skate. Sakic was unreal. Peter Forsberg was like, man, he was good. You couldn't get the puck from him. It was the worst game of keep away. I said this earlier, he just put his shirt off. He's like, "This guy's not a hockey player. He's just a body and like huge legs." And but he was mean too. So I would say the difference between him and Sakic is that Sakic was, guys would hit him, but they wouldn't try and run him. But Forsberg, guys would try and run him, and then he'd try and run him back. So if someone hit him, he'd go get him, like reverse hit, like you guys seen the videos. And he's just unreal. I mean, played a lot of good play. Yeah, those just off the top of my head, those guys.
So, Dinger, the second time you had the Stanley Cup, any different than the first time?
No, pretty much did the same thing. He was like Groundhog Day. Wheeled around a few places, had the same band, Mustard Smile. Don played with them. Headed in a different place. No, nothing. Pretty much same stuff. Fun thing for me was, you wait and win with the guys. Yeah, you drink out of it and celebrate. And your day of the cup's great because you're with all your friends and family, and they're like going nuts. And it's like someone, I don't know. I really enjoyed watching everybody else, how much fun they're having, because it's like cool, right? Growing up in Canada, well, anywhere, Boston, like any sports town, man. It's an unbelievable trophy, the history of it, all the guys that have won. And yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed watching how much fun everyone had, because the picture part of it was brutal though. Because when you do pictures, you're literally like half the day, you're like hoisting it, your arms are like jello, you're sweating. It's 30 degrees. I had on my birthday both times, so in July, so wasn't very cool out. So I'm like, "Okay, how many more pictures are we taking here? Can we take the next one?" Just when it's just sitting there. So
I gotta ask you, when it was all done with the transition from finally hanging them up to, let's say, civilian life, was it a tough transition for you?
A little bit. I mean, it's hard for everybody. I think went through a phase. It was pretty, yeah, it was tough because you don't know what you're gonna do. I was playing in Europe a little for a couple years, and it was fun. And then I just had my older boy, and And then where I was playing, I played in Sweden and Denmark. It was great. It was awesome. My son was just born. He's 3 months old. We brought him over. It was really cool. And then I was like, I couldn't keep playing, but like wasn't making like super good money. I was like playing to play. So I was done. Reached out to the VP of communications for Lightning, Billy Wicket, who's an unbelievable guy. And he's like, oh, hey, something I can do. He's like, you done? I said, I think so. So I started doing some TV or more radio. And then I started doing TV. And yeah, it's kind of like it was because you do this one thing and then you're done. They don't give you a handbook of maybe I should have looked at, whatever, planned ahead or, but like, agents tell me, oh, we're going to get you a tryout and I didn't have a contract. And so, yeah, it was kind of hard, but, it's like, hey, you figure out, do a couple of things and you're lucky to have people around you that support you. And my wife was great and told me to stop being an idiot a couple of times. And it's like you're playing golf and drinking. And it's like, hey, what are we doing? Like, let's get on and do something else. So, yeah, I got doing TV and radio and stuff, and that was really good. And before moving back to Edmonton, so that was fun. I was told I had a face for radio. So when I was doing TV, though, I had a little makeup kit. Like, guys wear makeup, man. It's shiny. Like, it doesn't make me less manly. But I'll never forget, I was in Montreal, and I asked she was the ambulance lady or the, what do you call it?
Paramedic.
Toronto paramedic, yeah. And she'd worked there for like 20 years. And like, she was an older lady, but, attractive woman. And I was like, hey, is there a bathroom around here? She's like, why? I said, well, I got to put my makeup on. She's like, well, let me see what kind of makeup you got. I was like, I don't even, like, my wife gave it to me. It was like Maybelline. I don't want to say the brand because, anyways, it was like stuff my wife didn't use anymore. And then she got me some under eye stuff. And you had the black circles, this powder. And she's like, you can't use this. It's terrible. It blocks your pores. And I'm like, I don't really care, man. I got to work for like 2 hours. And I can't believe I'm having this conversation right now about what kind of makeup I'm wearing. So went from like punch people in the face to talking about what kind of makeup I wear. So what the, where did it all go wrong? But anyways, it was good.
Ed, we're gonna start wrapping it up. So, Tom and Ed, one last question for Dinger, and we're gonna let him go.
Sure. Who's your favorite current player to watch right now?
Oh, I think Connor McDavid. Yeah, I mean, a lot of good players, but just being in Edmonton, just watching him skate, man, I wish I could skate like that. Like, I don't know. It's a cheat code. Like, once he starts crossing over, and oh, man. Imagine being a D-man trying to play D against him. You can't hook or hold. God, I broke both. The NBA thing or the basketball, like, I broke the guy's ankles.
Yeah.
It's a good thing hockey players wear really supportive hockey skates because, man, if they had to wear high tops, it'd be like half the league would be broken ankles. So, yeah, I'd have to say him.
Ed?
But you still believe that fighting has a place in the league?
Oh, yeah. 100%. I mean, not the way it was, but I think you find a happy, I guess, a happy medium. Just because I don't know, every whistle, like I tell my kids this, like my younger boy played in Swift Current last year in the dub, and I told him, I know you're scared. I was scared, but I'm like, you learn how to fight, you don't necessarily want to do it, but the way you play and you're physical, people want to fight you, and the better you are at it, no one's gonna want to fight you because guys aren't very brave anymore. And no one really likes getting punched in the face. I didn't. That's probably why I had so many bruises on the back of my head because I was like ducking them rather than getting punched in my face. So, yeah, I think it does. What's that?
Intellectual fighter.
Yeah, intellectual, well, smart. Intellectual, sure. Smart. Yeah. Or mischievous. No, deceiving. I don't know. Anyways, yeah. There's definitely a place for it. 100%. Because I think you have to answer. You have to answer the bell, whatever you want to call it, because I think, every whistle, it's like I had hard, like I like watching playoff hockey. That's why I love it because it's so physical. And you watch, it was like Montreal and Washington, and Tom Wilson and Anderson, we go back and forth through the bench. I'm like, this is great. The guys are like, what the freak? Like, no one knew what to do in there. But if you can run around and do whatever you want, you can do whatever you want. But If you have to fight, like I know from when I played, like if I wasn't feeling 100%, we're playing Chicago, like I'm gonna finish my checks. But if I gotta fight Probert and I'm not 100%, like I'm not gonna run around the same way because I'm gonna get the shit kicked out of me. So I still think there's a place. They're trying to break it up. All like I think the best solution would be twice a game. They decide. Whatever, around the 5 minute mark or 10 minute mark of the second period or the first, but whatever. You pick two or three times where the whistle blows and the linesmen go like this for like 10 seconds. It would be unbelievable. Because you look at every whistle, a guy fake tough guys you call them, like Kachuk or you go in there and shove and whatever, and the linesmen are coming in, and then like. Just like once, whatever, one or two or three times a game where call checking for quarters, it's like, oh yeah, who said that? Oh, yeah, I don't know who said that. And it'd be interesting, man, because guys would be, they'd be a lot different. Like, because you didn't know if that was the time because you might get the shit bumped out of you. So.
Digger, I gotta ask you, what do you want the legacy in your mind for the fans to have of your NHL career? What would you want people that played with you to remember you for, or get stuff that the average fan wouldn't know?
Blue guy. Is that what they say about players that aren't good? What kind of player is he?
No,
Is it
no.
locker room guy? He's a glue guy. No.
Hey.
No, I want to be
Shower
nice.
Seagull, one of those guys.
No, glue guy. Yeah, good in the room. No, I just want to be known for that. Being a good teammate. Working hard and doing anything to win. I played through a lot of injuries, concussions. My fingers, I can't straighten them out. I played through pretty much any injury I could. That'd be my legacy, to do anything to win, because I would. I did in my, block shots, played of broken bones and different things. So, yeah, just team guy. Because I think that's, you can have all the skill in the world, but if you're not a team guy or a playoff performer, you could add that to it. That, I knew what my role was. I did the best I could. I got it in. I didn't turn over. I played physical. Wasn't allowed to take penalties. So you're trying to, like, run guys over, but you're not allowed to take a penalty, which is like, then hardly would scream at you. It's like, well, you want me to go and fight, try and fight a guy and run a guy through the boards? Well, I'm not allowed to take a penalty. So, yeah, I think that'd be a good legacy that, when you see your teammates, they still want to say hi to you. And, it was nice. We went back for the 20th anniversary in Tampa. They flew everyone back. So, it's all about pretty much different couple guys. Everybody went back. So, it was. It's good to see the guys again. It's like no time had passed. That's the beauty of hockey and sports and winning is, everyone's telling stories about the cup runs and someone's got a new story about something and you're like, oh, I didn't know that happened or whatever. So, yeah, that's my legacy. Well, talking a lot too, as you can probably tell.
No, but we don't hate
Long-winded
that on this
answers.
show. Do not hate that on this show. I'll tell you that. I always ask everybody that we've had on that this is always our last question. If you had to sum up your career in one word, what would it be?
One word. Tough.
Agreed.
You take
Agreed.
that a couple different ways.
No, agreed.
Yeah,
Agreed. Totally agreed. That's great. But before we let you go, I just want to say the way we started is the way we always finish. Thanking you for coming on and keeping the NHL alumni relevant, and we're very thankful as fans and Gen X perspective on things, and we're so happy that we finally get a chance to sit down with you. It's late our time, but we're happy to to sit down and talk with you from the boys and chirping and telling stories and friend of the show. I gotta say it every time at the end. Definitely
no.
friend of the show going forward. We can't thank you enough, and it's
No.
sincere, very sincere, Dinger.
Awesome. No problem. Thanks for having me on. Go Chiefs.
Thanks. Love
Yeah.
it. 50th anniversary this year.
All right, boys.
Thanks
Appreciate it.
a lot.
Thanks
Dinger.
for your time.
Have a
Appreciate
good
it.
night.
Have a
Appreciate it
great night.
so much.
Yes.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
No problem. Bye.
Bye-bye.